Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacevic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic. It's my pleasure to welcome Fred Schenkelberg back for another episode of the Rooted in Reliability podcast. Welcome, Fred.
Hey, James. Thanks for the invite.
So we've talked about training in the past, capabilities of people, having the right knowledge, and that's part of what this podcast is about, is to make sure people have the right knowledge or gain an introductory to the knowledge that is out there. Mm-hmm. But is training really required to affect change and make sustainable improvements, or can we just walk out there knowing a little bit and make things happen?
Well, ever since I got my statistics degree, I've tried to avoid saying it depends. I've seen organizations where their culture is so strong that when they recognized they needed to change direction, or they needed to bring up a new line, or they whatever major project they were trying to implement, they could just walk out there and do it. And they would learn what they needed to learn along the way. And it wasn't a two-day offsite, or it wasn't an organized ongoing training program. I've seen it work really well, but what makes that work in my mind is a very, very strong culture that it's safe to go make mistakes and to learn and to make improvements and to, you know, figure it out as you go, which isn't common, unfortunately. Other organizations, the concept of, say, reliability-centered maintenance is completely foreign to them. So fundamental training on even just the concepts and the basic structure of it and how things should work versus what they're doing now can be really, really effective. And so I've seen it work both ways, and everything in between, I would suggest.
Okay. So if you got that strong culture, you got the people willing to learn on the job, we can make it work. You don't really require that formal training to affect that change.
That's right.
But is that really the most effective way?
No, I don't think so. One of the things I've seen work really well, it's a real mix of, I think, three different elements. One is the culture of that, hey, it's all right to make mistakes, just don't make them twice, basically, is learn from your mistakes and help the organization learn as we all move forward. And that's our cultural-based thing, where it's safe. So if I make a mistake and something fails because of something I did the wrong way, in the wrong culture, I would hide that, I'd blame somebody else, I'd not say anything. But if it was safe and the organization would benefit from me saying, oh, look, you can't substitute this bolt for this bolt because it's just not going to work, and they're in the same bin, so we have to fix that. You know, basically, and it actually gets fixed, using a trivial example. But you need to make it safe for people to identify things that need improvement and get those systems fixed. So part of it is that, and I think that's essential. You can put people in classrooms all day long, but if actually trying to use the new tools and techniques is risky to your career, you're not going to do that. You'll attend the class, sign the roster, and collect your pay, and keep your head down. Do it the way you're always supposed to do it. The second part is that there's this element of, well, what's in it for me, right? I remember years and years ago when computers were first coming out, I was asked to help this an admin use a word processor. She'd been using a manual typewriter for her entire career. And she was a few years away from retiring. And she looked at me and said, you know, basically, honey, I can type faster on this thing than you ever can type on this computer thing. And, you know, she had a point. The typing speed's not the benefit. And she did not want to learn about file naming or, you know, sorting. And this was all on Microsoft DOS. And she really didn't want to have to deal with that. And it didn't help her do her job. She didn't see the benefit of that until we showed her that if you make a mistake, There's no whiteout. You don't have to retype it. It's just a fix, something we take for granted now with so many computers around. But once she saw that it actually would save her time having to retype stuff, or they get a markup from her boss marking up a letter she's writing, and that it would take her just a trivial amount of time to rework the document and print the final copy. Then she went, it was like a light bulb went on. Ah, I can see where that's useful for me. So if the training is on reliability-centered maintenance or prognostic health management, but the people taking the class don't see any application for how they would use that or how it would make their life better or faster or more efficient, it's not going to affect their paycheck. It's not going to make their life better in any way. You're not going to get a lot out of that class. It's not going to get adopted. The adoption rate of the tools and techniques and stuff is just going to be low.
So the first two things before we implement training is we have to have that culture that allows us to fail once, learn from our mistakes, and progress, move forward. Mm-hmm. The second thing we need is people need to understand what's in it for them.
Yeah, and I mean, that's any change management type program will tell you that. You can force change to occur, but getting compliance and adoption and buy-in is very, very difficult. If there's something in it for them, they can make their life a lot easier. Yeah, I'll learn all day long to make that happen. The third part is the reinforcement. Is way too many times training is, let's say, a half-day event or a week event, or you go to a conference and you come back and then you get buried in your day-to-day work and you never have a chance to implement any of those things you learned about or give them a try. So you need space and reinforcement, and positive reinforcement, I should say, not the negative, and the expectation that what you learned in that class is, I expect you to implement it, and here's, do you need support? Do you need help? Do you need some guidance? Do you have any questions? Those kinds of things. One of the best classes I ever took, and I try to use the technique whenever I teach, is that it was a two-day class, and at the end of the class, we spent some time saying, well, what are your takeaways? What are you going to do different based on what you learned in the class? Write three things down, and we'll check in with you in 2 weeks. So what the instructors did is they got small groups of people together on the phone, because after the class we dispersed all over the country, and we got on the phone and she said, all right, Fred, you wanted to do XYZ. How did it go? And that was the only question she asked. She had my list of three things I was going to try, and I said, oh, well, X, I didn't even get a chance to do it. I expect to try it next week. So she made a note. She asked me the next time we talked. And she did 3 2-week follow-ups, so a period of 6 weeks. And she picked 6 weeks because it takes that long for a habit to take root, right? If you're trying to change somebody's behavior, the way they solve a problem or the way they approach diagnostics or the way they approach a situation, it's not a one-time practice and then they got it. She always called it building it into the muscle. And that takes time and these reinforcement pieces. So the second thing she ran into, and there was a handful of us on the call, was I tried it, but I got stuck. So the instructor then, well, where'd you get stuck? And then did us a real spot training, you know, saying, oh, when you're in that situation, look, you know, look to the left or whatever it was. Is, oh, you got to do this, or you got to look for this piece, or you have to do this step first, you know, and then they're off and running.
And that's that coaching or mentoring piece that you typically don't find in a lot of training that is needed to reinforce it, to make sure they understand they're applying the concepts and to really take away the most from that training.
That's right. And, you know, if you're lucky, you've got somebody in the organization that's a master at it already. And they're right around the corner, or you're a quick phone call away, and you can ask them. And it's safe to ask them, right? But if it's a brand new system into the organization, you may not have that internal expertise. So having the access to the experts, basically, to back you up and reinforce the knowledge as you need it is a key piece. And then the third thing she ran into was, I tried it and it worked really well. And she said, what was the result of actually making it work? And it was almost always, we saved money, we saved time. You know, my peers recognized that this really worked well, and I got the credit for it, you know. And she would write those things down. And those became the testimonials for the course, right? And the justification for the investment in the course. Here's how much money, as a direct result of people implementing things in the course, return on investment to your organization. I thought it was brilliant because it was the setting the expectation that you have to do something different after this course. Take something out of this course and try it. If you tried it and got stuck, you got help and encouragement to try again. And the third piece was that when something went well, it reinforced the value of the course, both to me as a student, but also to the organization that had invested the money to let me go to the course.
Absolutely. Now, keeping those things in mind, how does one organization or an individual select the right training option for them then?
Well, it's got to solve a problem or affect some change. So the course isn't, oh, we need to learn about SPC, statistical process control, so we go take a generic SPC course. Now, you could do that, and you may be successful with that, depending on your team and culture. But if you were looking at all the offerings for that style of a course, is the one that is giving you, it's tailored to your situation and organization and timeline. But more importantly is the trainer should ask, well, what are you trying to change? What are you trying to have as an outcome from the training? If the answer is, well, I want 20 people to take the course and sign off on that they took the course. And says, well, sorry, that's not worth the investment. What do you get when you get 20 people trained? What's going to happen that makes it worth spending that time doing it? If the trainers are focused on just giving you the cookie cutter, here's the course, here's the 400 lectures, and they're really watching the clock as much as the students are to get out of there because then they get paid. Well, you're just not going to get a whole lot out of that. Anybody is not going to get anything out of that. Whereas if the training is focused on, well, what's the business result you're trying to achieve? And that's clear in the onset of the training. Whether I'm picking a course that's, say, an on-demand online course, well, why am I spending the time to take that course? What am I trying to achieve? So I think that the objective piece is a big piece of the selection process. And then the other pieces would be, well, how much follow-up and interaction and access do you have? So if it's an online course, do you have, say, a discussion form or email or phone contact with the instructor to get the expertise where and when you need it? What kind of follow-up kind of activities can occur and are built into the course and those kinds of things? If you're just trying to learn the language of something, you may not need a course. You might need a book, right? Good website.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're trying to affect a behavior change, the way we go do diagnostic work and how we do troubleshooting, that's more mindset approach more than anything else. Well, that takes time to make that happen. And so having a course that accommodates that time necessary to make those changes occur and stick would be a much preferred course for me and what I would recommend.
Okay, so keeping that in mind, what is the most effective way to train someone in reliability? And what I mean by that is it classroom? Is it on the job? Is it taking that book, learning on your own? Is it a combination? Is it an online course?
Well, I've read a good number of studies about doing this because I've been in the process of trying to build courses and put them up online. And also, about a third of my work is teaching in one form or another, whether at university level or within organizations or just as a coach or mentor. It almost seems a good part of my work is teaching and coaching. There is no right answer. The medium of the training is not near as important, whether you do a classroom training or if you do an online course or some mix of the two or live online or asynchronous or synchronous course. That has such a small effect on the transfer of knowledge and the adoption of the knowledge versus the design of the course. And so if I take a course and it's nothing but 400 slides and I'm just reading the slides to you all day long and there's no discussion, there's no interaction, there's no scenarios, there's no thinking on parts of the students. It doesn't matter whether I do that online, pre-recorded, or if I do it live standing in the classroom. It's just not going to be an effective course. Where if you've got engagement, it's changing up, it stays interesting and attractive, it's clear how this material is going to help me as a student do my job better, or my work life will be better, or I'll stand taller because of this course, or whatever it is. If all of those elements are there and it allows me to build experience that I can then take and implement with confidence. And that's not somebody reading PowerPoint slides to you. right? And it doesn't matter whether it's live and in person, or is it online, say 2 hours once a week over a period of, say, 8 weeks, or if it's an on-demand course. So the medium is not a significant factor. And the cost advantages of going online or on demand then becomes more of, do I use it as a reference, right? Is this a one-time course and I go practice it and then there's follow-on reinforcement type activities? Or is this like YouTube channels where you have hundreds of small vignettes that, oh, I need to go work on this Samsung piece of equipment. I need to review real quick in 5 minutes this one step I need to review quick before I head out there. Right. Well, then the training is available. You get familiar with it, but then you can review that piece just as you need it. So if that's the intention to use, then the on-demand online course wins. It doesn't make sense to fly an instructor out to do a 5-minute class kind of thing. It used to be that live in-person classes was the only way to go. But today we've got way more effective options and cost-effective options, depending on the organization's particular situation.
Then maybe this is what I experienced, but overall, you still see a resistance or lack of adoption to the e-learning, whether it's, you know, a blended type learning where there's discussions, phone calls, on-demand training. Mm-hmm. There seems to be a lack of adoption for that still in maintenance reliability versus the in-person class. Everybody wants the in-person instructor, in-person class. Why is that?
Well, there's a lot of bad courses out there. You know, you've done in-person classes, right? If you just sit in front of a camera and present to the camera, it's going to be a boring as hell class because you don't have an audience to see what's working, what's not working. You don't know when to take a break. You don't know when Jill's got a question. You're not seeing John fidgeting, struggling with a concept you just went over and can go back to it. You don't see somebody about to ask a question. So you lose that online. So unfortunately, a good number of people have just taken their live courses and just recorded them, or worse, recorded them doing a live course, and the students are watching it from afar, basically. The different medium require different delivery techniques and different kinds of engagements and so on that replicate the interaction that you can get in a live course. It's just that you have to do it a different way. So it takes more work. So it's a mix of the early on online courses have been horrible, and they are getting better across the board. It takes some instructor training, basically, of how to put a course online. So there's that piece of it. The other part is, you know, if I'm used to being on the floor and working with my hands, going in and sitting on a desk and a computer for 4 hours is well nigh torture. It's not what I want to go do.
Yep.
Right? So given that kind of environment, how can I break that up so it's short, maybe 20, 30 minutes? It's a shop talk, or it's ongoing pieces. You mix it with the live instructor. We have way more options now. But gone are the days where a consultant or a trainer flies out to your factory every Monday for 6 months and provides a one-hour class. Think of the expense of doing that versus let's do a half-day series of training and a workshop so we actually get started on a project, and then we meet as small teams with the instructor online for 10, 15 minutes once a week to keep the project going. It's way more cost-effective, and we still have access to the instructor, and it's done with webinars after the initial lesson where we get to know each other. So every audience and every situation is a little bit different, and it's thinking through the right mix of techniques to deliver the material. Part of it is the audience, and part of it is the type of thing you're trying to change.
It makes perfect sense. Having that well-organized, well-structured course with the combination of instructor access can make that e-learning or online learning work for organizations. Now, I want to change pace a little bit. You know, we mentioned on-the-job training, mm-hmm. You know, the apprentice learning from a journeyman, mm-hmm. The new engineer learning from a professional engineer. How effective is that if there's no formal training involved?
Well, it's worked for eons, I mean, centuries and centuries, right? The process works well when what we're learning about, the equipment and materials and the processes, are relatively stable. But if every 6 weeks or every 6 months we're changing equipment, we're installing new sensors, and like the Internet of Things is coming through, well, there's not a lot of masters out there with that technology. So just because it's a senior engineer, he may not know any JavaScripting, right? The young guy may be the master in that case, coming out of school with it. I have two problems with it. When it's a stable system and there's a solid feedback mechanism so that the journeyman can learn, and it's safe to learn, and they're getting expert guidance. I mean, that's how I learned how to swim, right? A coach watched my strokes for a couple of laps and said, oh, work on this. You know, do this, keep your head down, do this with your arm, go to the left. You know, a couple just minor little things I'd work on with each lesson. And over a period of 6 months or so, I was a pretty competent swimmer. But if every 6 months we change the viscosity of the water, everything that coach knew is gone because the medium has changed. And so I think that approach is breaking down. Now, some things that are solid and stable, and that's the way the equipment is there, the diagnostic processes are the same, the set of tools and equipment, the knowledge we need is fairly stable, then there's nothing wrong with it. I think it breaks down, though, when we have so much change as we do today. The other part is that bad habits get propagated unless there's a really solid feedback mechanism to the masters that are doing the teaching. They have to really continue to learn. Otherwise, we're not finding and correcting the bad habits, which then just get propagated through the team.
Yep. It makes perfect sense.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out iridicio.com for a free copy of their ebook, A Smarter Way of Preventative Maintenance. This ebook will allow you to review your current maintenance program and eliminate the non-value-added work you're doing, which is most likely causing you more downtime than it is preventing. www.iridicio.com.
So we've gone through what we need to make training effective. How do we evaluate training options? What type of medium do we want to use for training? Where does one start to understand reliability or maintenance? Do they pick up that textbook? Is there a course? Where did this one start when they want to truly understand maintenance and reliability?
This is when your boss comes in and says, hey, James, you're the reliability engineer for the plant. Get busy.
Where do you start?
I think it starts with when you have a mandate to do it or you find that it adds value to your organization. If your organization really doesn't care about reliability, and until you win that buy-in, you're at risk, right? It doesn't really matter what you know or what you do. It's a non-starter. Part of it is it's seen as something worth doing, and then you invest to get up to speed. And every situation is going to be different. Sometimes it's going to be a real focus on root cause analysis so that you can sort out and systematically change your systems to minimize failures. And so if somebody recognizes that we're just fixing things and we keep fixing the same problems, maybe we should understand why it's failing and fix that instead. A lot of times that's where it starts, is where there's an opportunity. I mean, I started in reliability because I was trying to change manufacturability of some of the equipment we were designing, and the arguments for yield improvements were not sufficient to affect a parts change. But if I said that this part change will improve the field reliability, which is orders of magnitude more valuable to the organization, then I got buy-in and the engineers had to change the parts. And I got my objective, which was improve the yield. So it could start with statistics. It could start out of root cause analysis. It could start off with minimizing downtime by improving your maintainability parts of it. And then you recognize, if we change the design of this equipment, it would be a whole lot easier and quicker to fix it. I think we talked about that in a previous maintainability episode.
Yep.
Where you get started is where there's an opportunity to make a difference and then learn what you need to learn. And it could be, start on Wikipedia, get the basic language and concepts and so on, get a textbook or two, take an online course. Plenty of them out there that are not terribly expensive, and you can do that on the go and on demand. When somebody in the organization starts to make a difference and it's noticed, is then you can bring in the heavy guns and make some more systemic changes in an organization. But where to get started is where there's an opportunity that you see the potential. And then go figure out what you need to do. Ask the right questions first. Then you know what you need to know.
And you don't have to spend money to start that understanding, start that learning process. There's a calendar on Ascendo Reliability that highlights when there's webinars, when there's all kinds of things going on for maintenance, reliability, courses, webinars, whatever the case is. And we'll link to that in the show notes. And, you know, it's a great way just to start diving into a topic without investing a lot of money up front.
That's right. And I'd say more than half of the webinars listed in the monthly listing we send out on an email list are free. And topics range from asset management and the various standards that are being applied in different industries to working with a team to reliability statistics and just about everything in between. Yeah, good point.
So as an instructor, as someone who sat through courses, what is the one thing, if you could, you would change about the training delivered in reliability, maintenance, those sorts of topics?
I would get away from the, you know, 2-day to 5-day, 9-to-5 type classroom setting and make it more project-based. For the maintenance team and for the reliability teams to really understand reliabilities, they have to go do it. They have to realize it themselves and demonstrate that this stuff actually makes a difference to the bottom line, which then just reinforces the value of working on and improving the reliability program and maintenance programs. So if I could wave a magic wand, I would say the maintenance programs are really going to have to be project-based. And, you know, you get a classroom, you see you get 10 people in there, and pair them up and say, all right, there's 5 projects we're going to run. Come up with a project proposal. Here's the overview of what we're going to talk about and tools and techniques. And let's go find projects where you can use these things. And then the course curriculum pretty much just reinforces and helps them be successful with those projects. And so now you, instead of having maybe one of those 10 people being a champion for what's taught in the courses, you have 10 people with experience showing that it works. That's way more powerful within an organization than these 10 people went to a 2-day course.
Yeah, right? I couldn't agree more. Now they have that tangible takeaway that they learned, they applied. It's been reinforced, they've been coached, they've been mentored, and they're delivering value to the organization and themselves.
That's right.
In the end.
That's right. And, you know, the black belt programs oftentimes have it where there's a basic, like a boot camp of the different types of tools, and then there's a project. And the project duration will depend on the organization and the nature of what they're working on, types of things they're working on. But you have to demonstrate you can apply these tools before you become certified as a black belt. Same idea for reliability training, whether it's accelerated testing or root cause analysis or any of the other various tools, there's plenty of opportunity to improve reliability, maintainability, but you need to demonstrate it, practice it.
Yep. Couldn't agree more. Now, what's the one action you want our listeners to take away from this conversation?
Go try something. You know, I was fortunate when I was a manufacturing engineer, my manager insisted that we do an experiment every day, that we had to collect data, do some analysis, make a decision, try stuff. But the idea was is that by requiring us to do something every day that was outside our comfort zone, that was new to us, that we would learn. And along the way, we would incrementally make improvements. We would discover stuff that actually made things better and be doing what we're supposed to be doing as manufacturing engineers. But I've worked with plenty of bosses where it's you get your hand slapped if you go out and do anything experimental. You got to be safe. You got to be smart about what you're doing.
You learn so much more when you're out of your comfort zone trying something new.
Right.
You're going to take away those learnings so much quicker, I find.
That's right. And it trained us to look for opportunities for making improvements, but it also trained us to pay attention to anomalies. When something behaved differently, that was an opportunity for us to make an improvement. So we got to know the factory really, really well because we were constantly looking for something that wasn't operating the same as it did yesterday. Right? So I'd walk past a motor and it was making a different sound than yesterday. It wasn't a bad sound, but it was different. So I put a vibration sensor on it, and I measured it every week for a couple months and noticed that, hey, something's, I didn't have any idea what was changing. I think it ended up being a bearing but something was changing on this thing, and then I went and got one of the senior mechanics and said, what could be causing this and why would this change be happening? And he goes, oh, wow, how'd you get this data? We need to go change the bearings on that thing. And the only reason I did that was that I noticed something different, and I was expected to do an experiment, collect data and make observations and make recommendations for changes and then test them, test the changes worked. So my one recommendation out of this is when it's training or learning is just try it. If you pick up something in a course or online or an article or whatever, tomorrow, try it.
I couldn't disagree more. Now, before we wrap this up, where can people find out more about training, reliability training? I know we mentioned the Ascendo calendar that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
Where else can they find out more about training and any trainings you're offering, for example?
Well, at the Ascendo site, we have the live events as the webinar series. It's a monthly series that I offer. Actually, we're going to be bringing in some more speakers and try to ramp up that webinar program so it's a little more robust and more often. You mentioned the calendar, which has, there's two parts. There's a webinar calendar where there's an email list that it sends out one message a month, and it lists the next month's webinar offerings that we can find. But there's also a Google calendar that's on the site that lists all the seminars, workshops, conferences, all kinds of stuff, all over the world by all kinds of organizations. So that's a good spot. I just saw, and I'll have to see if I still have the email. I'll send it to you, James, is the CAM code. About a month ago, updated their list of in reliability training sources. And so they listed a handful of organizations I hadn't heard of before and a bunch of ones that I'm familiar with. So they had two of them. One was the 50 top blogs in reliability and maintenance field. But then they also had training outlets, everything from different companies to different to university programs, things like that. The reliabilitycalendar.org is a site I'm trying to move the material over to Ascendo, but it lists university programs from around the world. Most everything else I already have over on Ascendo, but the university listing is there. So if you're looking at formal education and a university degree or certification, you get it there. I keep looking at Udemy, Coursera, EDX, and the other online course vendors. James, you've got a course up, and I'm trying to think it's not on Udemy.
No, it used to be. I know one of the issues that I saw there personally is they changed their pricing model mm-hmm. quite regularly, and to develop a intensive course on these topics, it wasn't worthwhile to have them on there anymore.
Yeah.
So I noticed a lot of those types of courses left.
Yeah,
Udemy and some of the other marketplaces.
Yeah, and so different consultants and companies have course offerings. And what I've noticed though is that the in-person seminars have been declining in attendance, and more often they don't run because they lack attendance. So I think there's more and more interest in getting the online courses to work effectively. So I'm getting more requests to help people sort those things out and get them online. So I think we'll see more in that area, but. Yeah, Ascendo's site has resources, and we list books, journals, blogs. We're going to be adding the university piece here shortly. All kinds of different outlets for type stuff. Also, LinkedIn. Get on LinkedIn and get into one of the Reliability Success is a LinkedIn group that has got representation from all over the world. And if you ask a question, where can I get more information on fill in the blank, you'll probably get really good, solid advice from a handful of people that can move you along pretty quickly. So don't be afraid to ask questions. And I think LinkedIn and other forums like that are a great place to get started.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you, Fred. This, I think, was a fantastic topic, especially around what to expect out of a good course, whether it's online, in person. You know, you mentioned the project-based with the reinforcement, the coaching. I think that's vital to be able to apply what they've learned in any course.
Yeah, it really is that you have to take it out of the classroom. And if the course is built to help you get it out of the classroom, all the better.
Yep. Once again, thank you, Fred, very much for your time. I'm sure everyone learned lots. I know I even took away quite a few good learnings on, you know, the training topic. So,
well, I expect to see them in your courses and coming up.
Oh, you will. You will. Thanks, Fred.
Thanks, James.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the Reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.